Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network, Season 6, Episode 47, and it's Browns Week. And Dave, we had the Mike Tomlin press conference yesterday, and interestingly, the news that came out of it was injury news, and it wasn't good injury news. And we've been getting good injury news on Ben Roethlisberger, and it looks even better today as Ben has been seen at the facility walking with just a slight limp. I don't know if there's any possibility that he's going to play on Sunday. Mike Tomlin said he'd keep the door slightly ajar, and Ben himself said he's not going to rule himself out. So that's really good news, because that means after the bye week, if he doesn't play this week, you could certainly expect him to be back for the Seattle game. But the disconcerting news is D'Angelo Williams, Ryan Shazier, and James Harrison were all of a sudden all on the injury report. And again, the news today sounds like D'Angelo's not that serious, and that's obviously paramount. But Ryan Shazier has to be concerning, and James Harrison, you know, it's amazing he's made it this far, because I think you were said even at the beginning of the season, if he makes it halfway through the season, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, you know, you just wonder when the wheels are finally going to come off. I mean, there's no doubt that he's kept Father Time at bay. I think most fans probably would have expected a little bit more out of James Harrison so far this season. But, I mean, it's not like he's playing awful. It's just, look, I mean, the outside linebackers as a whole, as we talked about the other day, just really not getting home and getting the pressure that you'd like to see in certain instances, and particularly on third down, which, you know, Mike Tomlin hit on Tuesday during his press conference. Ryan Shazier, yeah, we'll see. Knee swelling, I think Tomlin said. We'll see if he goes. At some point during this week, you would expect him to either be limited or not go on Wednesday. And really, you know, as far as James Harrison goes, he normally gets Wednesday off anyway. So I don't think we can read too much into that. We'll just have to see what happens moving forward. Matt Spaeth looks like, well, he is going to miss a second consecutive game with knee inflammation, according to Tomlin. The good thing about, I guess you could say good thing, is Jesse James, you know, played well in his NFL debut against the Raiders. So, obviously, he will dress against the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. D'Angelo Williams, as you mentioned, inflammation in the middle of one of his feet. We'll see what happens there. You would think, give him a couple of days off this week. He should be ready to go by Sunday. And then you might want to kind of plan on maybe trying to get Todman, you know, a little few extra carries in there to kind of take the load off of Williams a little bit in that game. Terrence Garvin also ruled out for this week with that knee, although I think Mike Tomlin called it a high ankle with Garvin. He might have misspoke there. Tomlin did say that defensive end Stephon Tuitt and safety Will Allen didn't experience any setbacks with their previous injuries coming out of the game. And, of course, the big news, of course, the Roethlisberger. I will be absolutely shocked if he plays this week against the Browns, especially when you consider the bye week follows that, and then, you know, the game against the Seattle Seahawks, which let's all hope that he's able to make it back for that.
Yeah, so I'm generally with all that stuff. Just the thing about Ryan Shazier, Dave, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, that I had been told by somebody close to the organization that one of the things when they drafted Ryan Shazier is they thought that he'd be able to put weight on and play at kind of 240, 245 and still have the quickness and explosiveness that he had in college and that we've seen at times. And they came to believe last year that he just structurally, his skeletal structure, just he's not a guy who can carry that kind of weight. And you just wonder if the, you know, we know what his issues are. It's being able to, if the offensive linemen get to the second level, he has trouble shedding blocks. If you're giving up 70 to 100 pounds on guys, it's just an incredibly difficult thing to do. And I think it's been now 25 Steeler games in his career, and I think he's played 13 of them. And if he has a soft tissue injury on the knee and isn't able to go today, and if he's out this week, I don't like to use the word injury prone on guys because different things happen and you get hurt. I mean, I don't think Le'Veon Bell's injury prone. I don't think Ben Roethlisberger's injury prone. It is the nature of the game that guys get hurt. But if you're a smaller guy, then the odds of getting hurt are, bigger. You talk about small running backs and the punishment that they take. Well, Ryan Shazier playing in the interior a lot and taking on guys bigger than him constantly, I don't know. Maybe that's going to take a toll and impact him ever reaching the ceiling, the type of game we saw against the 49ers where he can be that dominant guy in the middle of the field. So this is going to be interesting to watch, and I think the rest of the season for him particularly is going to be fascinating to see how he does, whether he can stay healthy, and whether he can be an impact player, because in his first couple of games back, he really hasn't been.
Yeah, and look, outside, I think, of the game against the Raiders, I think he's played well in the games that he has played in this season. Obviously, it's easy to go back and circle the one against the 49ers with a career-high 15 tackles, but they need him to be that kind of guy week in and week out. We saw on the film against the Raiders that not only he, but Lawrence Timmons as well, did a poor job in their gap fills, and Mike Tomlin hit on that Tuesday during his press conference as well too. You absolutely, especially if you're going to run a lot of nickel like the Steelers were forced to do this past week against the Raiders, you've got to have solid inside linebacker play when teams decide to spread you out and then run up the middle against you like the Raiders did. And don't think that teams haven't taken notice of that on the tape. I know the Browns are void a lot of offensive talent on offense, but they do have a good back in Duke Johnson. So is it Duke Johnson or Duke Williams?
Duke Johnson.
And based on what he's done so far this season, you would think that the Browns, are going to look at that tape and try to put in some 11 personnel and try to let those big guys up front of theirs try to do their job and play keep away from the Steelers and gouge the Steelers with the run. And in doing so, they're going to keep a guy like Steve McClendon off the field in the process, who, by the way, when he has been on the field this year, teams are only averaging something like 2.1 yards per carry. So, Stephon Tuitt really wasn't as impactful last week against the Raiders. First game back from injury, you would think he's going to get back to himself in this second game. But, they played those guys a lot of snaps, him and Cam Hayward, against the Raiders. And at some point, I think you've got to have people come off your bench and be able to take some of those snaps away from them. And right now, it doesn't look like the Steelers have guys able to do that outside of maybe McClendon, who they did not use really as a defensive end against the Raiders. So it'll be interesting to see that mindset. But getting back to the whole linebacker thing, it does start up the middle, and you have to be kind of concerned with the success that the Raiders had in that game running the football.
Yeah, I'll just go back to what we've been talking about the past couple of weeks and say, look, I've got big concerns about this defense. Everybody can say the defense has performed better than they expected coming out of the preseason, and I'm on that list as well. But it was points, not yards. If you look at the yards that the defense has given up, that's kind of what we've expected. What they've been able to do is create turnovers, and that's been a large key to the success in games where they've kept points down and given up a lot of yards. And so that's going to have to continue to happen, and that's going to happen, if you continue to get pressure, you're more likely to have that happen. But I'm not all that comfortable with where this defense is now. We can talk about what they did the first half of the season, and they did well enough, but they need to continue to improve. And, with the outside linebackers really bringing nothing to the table, with a secondary where Mike Mitchell certainly had a good season. William Gay, they don't throw at anymore, so you can say he's having a good season. But Antoine Blake's making plays, but I don't know that he's having a great season. He's made big plays. And, the other safety position, okay. But the inside linebackers haven't been impactful of late. The outside linebackers haven't been impactful. So, the guys who are making this defense go are the two defensive ends and maybe Mitchell and Gay. They need those guys in the middle to, get it going.
Yeah, you know, too, we talk quite a bit about or have recently about field position, David, and I think that's one area where we really haven't seen this defense be able to step up and get, you know, a few stops during a couple of three and outs. You know, let's say an opening kickoff or a nice punt. You know, how many times, you know, it hasn't been enough that we've seen that defense be able to get maybe a three and out or a six and out and then have the opposing team kind of punt and get the ball back at say, their 40-yard line to kind of give them the short field. You know, we have seen quite a few times that while maybe opposing offenses haven't scored, a touchdown, they've been able to put together 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 play drives. And then thus, you know, if the defense does get the stop or they do get the turnover, the offense is getting the ball back deep in their own end. Look, the name of the game is to just keep the opposing team out of the end zone. And they have done a fairly decent job up until this past week, you know, for the most part, of being able to do that. Obviously, you could point back to the Kansas City game where they did a great job in the first half limiting them to all those field goals. But in the second half, you know, they allow points on the board. You just want to see a more complete defense. You want to see a defense that's able to get off the field more consistently on third downs and in third downs, early third downs in a drive as opposed to later in the drive.
Dave, we're going to have Tom Reed join us. Tom covers the Browns for Cleveland.com. You can follow him on Twitter at TReed1919 and get into this. You look at this game with this Browns team, 2-7 coming in. Their season's another lost season. We'll see if there's turnover at the end of the year at both the GM and the head coaching position. But you look at this, how comfortable are you with Landry Jones? Is it a completely different feeling than either of us had 6 weeks ago, that if Ben were to miss the game, you know, you're not just automatically putting it in the loss column?
Well, you're right. Yeah, I think the level of company, obviously, I mean, how many of us wanted Landry Jones gone last year, you know? And here he is, and he's put up, look, coming off the bench, he's a good relief pitcher, isn't he? You know, coming in.
Two saves.
Yeah, two saves, two wins. But you want to see him be able to – I mean, you go back to that game against the Kansas City Chiefs. While he played okay in the game, you know, in my opinion, it wasn't an awful performance. There's obviously some throws that he would like to have back. You know, and I'm not just talking about the interceptions either. You know, remember the high ball to Marcus Wheaton. You remember a couple other throws in that game that he failed to make. Just because there is a better comfort level, I think, on outsiders, us, you know, watching the game of how we view him, it still doesn't mean that, okay, this is a slam dunk, because, I mean, you're talking about it, you know, any given Sunday in the NFL, and especially if Josh McCown is able to play in this game, David, for the Browns, you know, he isn't half bad. He isn't half good either. But, I mean, he has completed a large percentage of his throws this year. The offense seems to be have more rhythm for the Browns when he's been in there this year. Now, obviously, they don't have a lot of the offensive weapons at wide receiver, but, you know, Gary Barnage is having a good season for them. And we already talked about, their running back and Duke Johnson, and their line's not bad either. So, you know, the worst thing I think that you the main thing that I think that you worry about with Landry Jones going into this game is the ball security issue. You know, just don't turn the football over. Don't force the football into Antonio Brown if you don't need to. Make sure you know you're not always locked into your first read, which we've seen Landry do. You know, if he stays away from the turnovers in this game, you know, like any other game, I think it's pretty obvious that the Steelers stand a good chance to win. But is it a slam dunk just because based of what we've seen so far out of Landry so far this season? Absolutely not. There's still some level of discomfort there, but I mean, I'm more shocked than anybody with the way he's been able to play this season, especially in situations, high pressure situations in the game against the Cardinals and the Raiders.
So let's talk about a couple things coming out of the press conference from Mike Tomlin. First of all, obviously Maurkice Pouncey's health is a state secret, and we will have no updates until he starts practicing. I mean, I asked Mike. He's been asked kind of 4 weeks in a row now, any update? And I even asked the question, did you get an update last week on Maurkice Pouncey? And he said no, which obviously hard to believe that that's true, but okay, he doesn't want to answer that question. So we don't know where they are with Pouncey and whether he's going to be back, because we're in the window now. When he starts practicing, he has 21 days to be active. So maybe the Steelers wait, obviously, now until after the bye. And you see, you know, if he starts practicing at that point, maybe he's back for the last couple of weeks of the season. But, you know, it's all speculative. We know nothing further about that. So that was one thing. You pointed out, he talked about the edge rushers needing to win one-on-one battles. You know, we had hit on it Monday. It was good to hear him say that, you know, obviously he saw it as well. Dave, the thing that I found somewhat amusing is he commented on Jacoby Jones, and you would have thought Jacoby Jones had a day on Sunday, the way Mike raved about the energy that he brought. I said, well, that's nice. It would have been great if he brought some yards as well. But he suggested, which I again found a little amusing, that they didn't have any time to practice. So now with the chance to practice, things will get better. I mean, if there's one thing you probably don't need to practice much when you're a 10-year vet and you've done it your whole career, it's kick returns and punt returns. But I did find that somewhat humorous.
Well, I'm going to disagree a little bit with that, because if you ever heard Danny Smith, you know, they talk to Danny Smith, Bob Labriola does every, what is it, Thursday before practice, and they air that on Steelers Nation Radio. And, you know, it's quite interesting to hear Danny talk about how certain returns are set up and all the intricacies that are involved with that. I mean, it really, really is. You know, something as simple as how the ball's lined up on a tee, little things like that. You know, obviously different returns are set up in different situations. The wind, the weather has a lot to play with it. So,
I mean, but isn't that just a 2-minute conversation?
Yeah, but I think, I mean, like anything, practice makes perfect, and getting the reps and knowing where the guys in front of you are going to be and getting a feel with what they're able to do. You know, instead of just, you know, hey, kid, get back there and catch this ball and run fast, you know, run north and south. So now on the flip side, am I expecting a huge, a huge improvement over what we've seen or what we saw on Sunday? No. In fact, I mean, one of the first responses I gave, you know, back when Jacoby Jones was claimed off waivers, it was more of a meh, which I was kind of indifferent to it. And to be quite honest with you, David, and I'm still deciding on whether or not to write about this, I'm kind of curious why they didn't first, turn to Jordan Todman to see, you know, maybe if he could provide a spark back there, especially maybe this past Sunday. Okay, you went out and you got Jacoby Jones. We get it. But, you know, he didn't practice. Okay, we get that. So why not in this first game, why not take the opportunity to see what Jordan Todman can do, can give you as far as returns, being A, he's been with the team all season. B, he has a good, solid history of returning. Now, is he going to be a guy going to break 180 or 90 yards for you? Probably not. But is he a guy that can get one past the 30 or past the 40 for you? Yes, he's shown that during his career. So, you know, that's one of the things that kind of popped in my head. As far as the punt returning duty goes, man, when you go back and look at those seven punts, fortunately the Steelers were able to block one of those against the Raiders. Jacoby Jones only returned two of those for, what, 2 yards. He let two of them bounce inside of the 10. Both of those were down inside of the 10. One was a short punt that really had no option but maybe to let that bounce like it did. And then, you know, Tomlin all of a sudden pulls the plug on it, puts Antonio Brown back there for the seventh and final Raiders punt, and he proceeds to fumble. Now, did he proceed to fumble because just not, you know, not in tune and having the reps early in the game? It was a good strip on the play, a good defensive play, so you don't want to not credit that as well, too. But, there's a lot of questions right now. And then when Tomlin, when Tomlin was asked Tuesday whether or not, you know, who his punt returner is going to be Sunday against the Browns, he said he's going to spin the dial.
Yeah, I did chuckle when he said they both have Pro Bowl credentials and they sit in the cafeteria and tell each other how good they are. Something along those lines. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm with you on the Todman thing. And they said, look, we saw Marcus Wheaton do it successfully last year. So they have alternatives. If Jacoby Jones doesn't bring, look, clearly Mike has a spot in his heart for both Mike Vick and Jacoby Jones, two guys that he signed He likes them as players. You can tell there's a relationship there. So he's going to get an opportunity. We'll see if he does better this coming week.
Let me ask you this. What percentage chance would you give that Jacoby Jones is not on this roster come week 17?
Zero, unfortunately, because I think Mike won't cut him. But, you know, I think he should have cut Mike Vick a couple weeks ago. You know, Mike Vick doesn't serve any purpose on this. You know, if he's playing the game, the Steelers have no chance. He can't run the offense. So I don't care who you go find. I think anybody would be better than Mike Vick from what we saw. Jacoby Jones, I think if we see the same thing for the next 5 weeks, he's not going to cut him.
Now, of course, if he goes out and returns one this Sunday against the Browns, 60 yards, you know, we're going to sit there and say, oh, okay, we were wrong, you know. But I mean, I think it's too early to say whether it was a right or wrong decision, though, right?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, but first impression certainly wasn't good. And I'm, you know, don't get me wrong, I was no Dree Archer. There's no posters of Dree Archer that had to come off of my walls. But, you know, I mean, you know, look at Jacoby Jones' age, look at most recent resume when it comes to returning kicks and punts, and it's just not very pretty. So, you know, and you're right, you know, Tomlin's likely to stick with him just because, I don't want to say because he's stubborn, or maybe I am trying to say he's because he's stubborn, but, you know, they thought they were going to get a shot in the arm with him, and we'll see. Because let's face it, this offense, especially with Ben Roethlisberger out this week, this offense really could use a couple of drives starting around midfield.
Yeah, any week, but sure, with Ben not there. So, Dave, concerns about D'Angelo Williams' workload, because Mike got asked that question and he dismissed it again. He dismissed a lot of questions yesterday, to be honest. You know, when I asked him about the blown coverage, he said, you know, we screwed up. Or he had a lot of short, you know, he just won't go into the X's and O's ever. And if, you know, people say, well, why don't you ask him about Lawrence Timmons carrying tight ends down the field? I mean, he's just going to say, you know, that's the scheme. Or he just will not get into the X's and O's about what goes on. Again, we see coaches around the NFL have chalk talk videos and do different things. Mike won't do any of that. So, at least at the press conference, what do you think about D'Angelo Williams' workload? And are you concerned? Should he be limited to 20-ish, 18 to 20 carries a game, and whoever it is, Todman and Pete, be taking the other six to eight if you run it 30 times?
Yeah, and you know me, I'm a huge D'Angelo Williams fan. I mean, look, I wrote back in February that this is the guy that the Steelers need to seriously think about bringing in, assuming that he was going to be cut by the Carolina Panthers, which everybody pretty much knew he was going to be at that time. So with saying that I'm a huge D'Angelo Williams fan, I also, you know that, I mean, it's no secret that he's – you know, he's not a guy that you, I think, can consistently ask to carry the football more than, you know, 20 times a game. In fact, against the Raiders, he carried the football 27 times. That was the second most amount of carries he's had in a game throughout his entire career. The last time he carried the football more than that was in 2009 in a October game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he carried it 30 times for 152 yards in that game, two touchdowns. He also had two receptions for 20 yards in that game. So that's the second most amount of carries that he's had in the game. Additionally, he's only carried the football more than 20 times in a game, 13 total times during his career. And this guy's been around the league quite a while. So I think it's obvious. I think you need to keep him, you know, around, you know, under 20 carries a game if you can help it, and especially now that we know that there's some sort of issue with that foot. I mean, the less that you can limit his work, the better. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they get off to a big lead against the Browns, and maybe they can kind of get either Pete dressed for this game, which we'll have to see if he even can get up to speed this week, or, you know, specifically get Todman a few more carries in this game as well, too. So, you know, I think, of course, the flow of the game is going to dictate that, but I think 20, 23, 24 carries against the Browns, you know, regardless of the success that he has, I think you need to start thinking, hopefully, longer term picture and picture with this thing, and assume that you're going to make the playoffs. And do you really want a guy carrying the football half the season, 23, 24 more times a game?
It's going to be interesting to watch because I don't think Mike agrees with what you just said or what I think. I think he's going to use them as much as he sees fit. The interesting question is that we don't have an answer to. If you put Jordan Taubman in there or Isaiah Pete in there and give him 20 carries, are they going to do the same thing that, did Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams have been? Obviously, the likely answer is no, but, they're running through some big holes. When D'Angelo Williams took that one over the left side for 53 yards behind DeCastro and Nix, that's a big hole there, and it's just, hit the hole and you're gone. Hopefully we don't have to find out, but I'm with you. I'd like to see those guys carrying the ball 6 to 8 times a game and see how they work them in. And
Taubman has shown, during his career, that he can be that kind of, let's say, 12 snaps a game type of guy. Mix in about 3 or 4 carries in there. He can catch the football out of the backfield as well too. He's more than decent in pass protection throughout his career. So, I think that's a situation. Maybe it's a situation where you kind of maybe pull D'Angelo off the field on some third downs. Maybe at least one series a game, you put Pete in. For it, kind of a Mwaldi Moore type of role with him. So it's going to be interesting to watch how this game plays out against the Browns. And look, we're not trying to take anything away from what D'Angelo has done, because let's face it, that was a tremendous performance that he had Sunday against the Raiders. But I think if you're thinking big picture here, you got to kind of. Reserve some gas for him in the tank. And because of that, I think if you can get Taubman out there for 9 or 10 snaps, getting 4 or 5 carries and maybe a touch in the passing game, I think that, that'll certainly help. Because, let's face it, if you get in a situation too late in the game where you're protecting, a 9-point lead, what are you more likely to do? You're likely to hand off the football and run it. So, who are you going to want out there in those situations? Well, I think the obvious answer is D'Angelo Williams.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, other things out of the press conference. Just looking at the game again, Dave, I asked Mike if the other wide receivers, meaning the non-Antonio Brown wide receivers, if they were off with Ben. And, he pointed out that he seemed to be in sync with Antonio, although, not exactly in sync with Antonio either. They missed a hot read. Antonio, I think, missed a hot read, and Ben bounced the ball to him. And the tap dance Antonio did on the sideline was a great catch on a pretty open wide receiver. But the other guys had trouble. You get any sense as to whether those guys are running the wrong routes or didn't, cut when they were supposed to sit or sit when they're supposed to cross or anything from that?
No. I mean, it's so hard to know exactly what the combinations are in there. But there's no excuse for it, right?
Not at this point in their careers and time together now.
Could it be a lot of timing issue? Let's face it, Roethlisberger missed quite a few games, in there as well too. So don't know how much that had to do with it as well too. But one guy that we know didn't have an issue was Antonio Brown, based on his performance. I think it's obvious that we would like to see, or we thought that we would see more out of Marcus Wheaton up until this point.
Oh, it's a really disappointing season to date. Really disappointing.
Yeah. And as we touched on in the last podcast as well too, I think the same goes for Martavis Bryant. Let's face it. He had the short drop there early on in the game, and then Ben put one right in the basket to him down the sideline. Those are the kind, especially that one down the sideline,
game changer for sure.
Game changing type plays. Not only, let's say you don't finish out the drive, but it's a field position win on top of it. It gives defenses something else to think about on top of it. So, you would like to see both those guys along with Darius Heyward-Bey. Darius Heyward-Bey had a great start to the season, so we know he has it in him to catch, 2-3 balls for, 35, 40 yards a game. So, you know, obviously you have a guy like Heath Miller in there that you hope that you can lean on. You know, how much of this has to do, you know, in this last game with Le'Veon Bell being out and the threat that he brings, you know, because it's obvious you go back and look at especially that first catch that D'Angelo Williams had in the game, they pretty much ignored him, right? So, you know, are they paying more attention and kind of bracketing those guys and making the windows smaller, you know, on passes those to those guys? You know, that needs to be looked at as well. So, yeah, I don't think, even though Antonio Brown is a guy that week in, week out, that you've come to expect to get at least five catches for 50 yards a game and even higher than that, you know, you just got to be wary of having to make all of your offense have to run through him game in and game out. And that's kind of what I'm worried about this week with Landry Jones under center.
Okay. I'm trying to think if Mike had anything else that was illuminating in the press conference.
I know you had some positive things to say about Jesse James, as you would kind of expect with that. You know, as you said, Mike's not one to get into X's and O's very much and pointing blame, you know, on plays given up. I thought his answer, you know, he was asked about the secondary playing more physical without drawing a lot of penalties this year, and he kind of pointed to, well, you know, Ike Taylor's in the studio now, and you know that got a chuckle, you know, as it should, but. You know, you would like to see this secondary at times, you know, play better. And I think that's a captain obvious statement there, especially in second and long situations and third and long situations. And, you know, I just can't help but thinking, David, that, you know, we talked about this earlier, while the defense has played better than most of us thought it would this season, there's still the however comma in there. And, you know, when you run up against good quarterbacks, you know, I think good quarterbacks are going to be able to expose this defense for what it is. And I think we saw that this past week. Well, I know we did against David Carr. So that's kind of where I'm worried about. And obviously you kind of worried about the offense's ability, the Steelers' offense ability to finish drives when they should, and especially, you know, coming off of turnovers. So, I mean, let's face it, where would you put it this week on the must-win scale?
It's right back up there because, again, it's a game that we've all counted as a win, and it just, if you lose this one, you don't have the leeway when you know go to when you play Indy or Denver or go to Seattle. I mean, you know, we're going to count a couple of those as losses, and I think we figured that they can lose two more games and they'll make the playoffs. They lose three more games, it's going to be a lot tougher. So, you know, you're counting on two victories against the Browns. So I think it's a must-win game. It's a 9 in my book.
Yeah, and it's just one that we've had circled as one for forever and a day, and especially considering, you know, the injuries that the Browns figure to have coming into this game as well, too. And let's face it, it's not guaranteed that McCown starts this game, and even if he does, you know, that rib injury that he suffered, you really that much closer to one hit away from being back with Johnny Manziel. And then, oh yeah, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, we'll have to see what happens with the concussions and all that they have. But Joe Hayden is still not practicing, and the same for Dante Whitner as well too. So both those guys missed the game against the Bengals, and you would have kind of thought with the first practice back after all that time off, being as how they last played on a Thursday, that all those guys would have been out there running around, but you know that wasn't the case there. So we'll have to watch that as well too. I'm with you. It's going to be a huge disappointment, even though Landry Jones, you know, is starting this game. It's going to be a huge disappointment if the Steelers lose this one.
And it also it tells you the Steelers aren't that good a team. I mean, you've got to win without your best players at times. And if Landry goes out and he's 10 for 40 and throws three interceptions, okay, you can kind of toss it aside and say quarterback lost you the game. But if that's not the case, then you wonder, because this is not a good Browns team. It just isn't. Some of the games have been competitive. They played Denver tough at home. You know, they have won twice, but they're just, you know, they're not a good team. We're going to talk to Tom Reed here in a second, so we'll get filled in on what's going on.
How big does Andrew Luck miss the Steelers game, or does he make it back just in time for that one?
I'm guessing he misses it. Lacerated kidney for 2 to 6 weeks. I mean, you'd have to see how things heal. He's a tough dude. He definitely, You know, he's like been in that respect. He gets back on the field. But I'll tell you, now that 1-6 wins the AFC South, it sounds, you know, sounds like, I mean, good gracious.
Yeah, all of a sudden, Bill O'Brien's got a chance to keep his job, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And but, I mean, let's face it, though, the Colts haven't been half bad with Matt Hasselbeck. He started two games this season. He's won both of them. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Who does Indy's on a bye this week, right?
Don't know. Yeah, that sounds right. But I'm not.
I think they are. But, I mean, look, the Steelers would get, you know, it's obvious that it would be a huge break if they don't have to face Luck a couple of weeks from now. Because, I mean, let's face it, coming out of the bye week here for the Steelers, there's some tough games when you look at Seattle, when you look at Denver, when you look at Indianapolis, when you look at Cincinnati. It doesn't get any easier after the bye. So they sure better take care of business at home Sunday against the Browns.
All right. Well, let's get to our guest, Tom Reed of the of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer, going to join us next. Okay, welcome back. And as we do every Wednesday on the Terrible Podcast, we'd like to get one of the beat writers who covers the Steelers' opponent for that week. And, of course, this week, a 1 o'clock kickoff at Heinz Field as divisional rival the Cleveland Browns come to town. And we're pleased to be joined by Tom Reed, a friend of the show. You can follow him on Twitter, at TReed1919, Cleveland.com, affiliated with the Plain Dealer, and a fervent Liverpool supporter. It hasn't been all that great for the Liverpool this year, Tom. Are they going to get to Europe next year?
Yeah, I think they will, although they'll be back in the Europa League. I don't see them making Champions League this year, but we'll see. Coaching change, and they just need better personnel, kind of much like the team that I cover.
I was going to draw the analogy, but it's better off that you do that. Tom, let's talk about where the organization is, kind of big picture, 30,000 feet. The coaching change last year, again, there's been turmoil, of course, over the whole existence of the franchise since it's been reestablished in 99. Where are they now, in your view, versus where they've been over the past 5 to 7 years?
Sadly for Browns fans, in many ways, maybe back to square one here. They don't know who their quarterback's going to be for the future. And there's just a lot of question marks about who's going to be running this team and who's going to be coaching this team next year as the kind of the free fall continues here at 2-7 and goes back to last year that ended with a 5-game losing streak. So there hasn't been much winning since late November last season.
Your best guess right now is Mike Pettine coming back next year?
My guess would be no, and not just because of – and that's not all on Mike Pettine, just because of the idea that if you're going to change general managers, which I would think they would do, most general managers would want to hire their own coach. And if you guys remember, that really wasn't the case with Mike Pettine. I mean, this was kind of a shotgun marriage with – he and Ray Farmer, after they kind of, surprisingly a little bit, got rid of Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi, and they kind of created a power vacuum there. And they, the owner, Jimmy Haslam, as you guys remember from minority ownership of the Steelers, just decided to elevate Ray Farmer after they had hired Mike Pettine. So my guess is if Farmer is gone, unless the guy is a big Mike Pettine fan, they're going to find a new coach next year.
How big a deal was the suspension and the kind of stuff that went on in the background that we heard about at the end of last year with Ray Farmer? I mean, I don't have a good enough kind of finger on the pulse to understand what's going on there, but it just seems like that's the type of stuff you don't want, obviously, to have happen in your organization. Is that just a minor detail that should be pushed aside, or is that something more serious and that's part of the bigger picture of the problem?
Well, again, I'll go back to the statement I made previously. There's a vacuum of power here. And when you have a vacuum of power and you don't have one voice kind of leading the organization, we see that with Bill Belichick in New England, and to an extent, I'm sure, with Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, you have a lot of people that want to be in the owner's ear. You have a lot of people kind of, you know, trying to do the right thing, but maybe not going about it the right way. And that's kind of what happened with Ray Farmer, who – you know, it's certainly on the face of it, it's not a big deal. You're catching down the sidelines in an era where you can just get a headset or whatever, what coaches have. But what it was bigger than that was, again, this idea that who's in charge here, who's calling the shots. And what happened was they had a very good veteran coordinator in Kyle Shanahan who kind of took a temperature of what was going on in Berea and decided, I don't want to be here. And probably he also saw the quarterback that he was going to have to deal with in the future, Johnny Manziel, and thought, man, let me see if I can find something out there that's maybe a little better than this. And so he leaves, and it just adds to this whole lack of stability, which has plagued this organization since they returned in '99.
Tom, how much do you put on the scouting department as opposed to the front office when it comes to, you know, especially the drafts of the Browns the last several years? Do they need to overhaul everything, or do you think the scouting department's fine? It's just organizational decisions and not using that information wisely.
Well, they just really beefed up their scouting department in the off season after, you know, the first year this group had with, with Justin Gilbert and Manziel, and everyone knows the problems that kind of occurred with those two. And at the time, the thing was, well, Farmer had got the job late. They didn't have as many scouts as they do now. The Gilbert thing is a little bit more mysterious because he's had some like off-field issues that some say weren't apparent, maybe, or as apparent. But Manziel, of course, you know, everyone knew what Manziel was. And he's kind of, you know, for his gifts and his deficiencies have all kind of transferred to the NFL. I'm not sure if what the answer is that if it's there's also a philosophy here. I mean, they're just one of the things I think drives people crazy is how much this organization talks about the importance of the bottom of the roster at a time where, you know, you would be hard pressed to find an organization in professional sports that's had a worse first-round draft picks over the last 5 years than the Browns. But they can constantly talk about the importance of players 23 through 53. And yet they constantly get beat by Ben Roethlisberger and Joe Flacco and, you know, Antonio Brown and guys like that. It drives people crazy here, and they can't quite understand why there's such a fetish of the bottom of the roster.
Coming out of the trade deadline, of course, there was a lot of talk about Joe Thomas possibly being shipped out to Denver. Alex Mack didn't, surprisingly, in my opinion, didn't want out, wanted to stay there. Has there been much, do you sense much fallout, or if any, in the locker room, you know, being as how, you know, it's apparent that you know, they would have possibly traded, you know, their one of their best offensive players in Joe Thomas?
You know, I just think it's you know, going back to the Mac situation just real quickly, Mac has done a great job of keeping control of his career. That contract, you'll probably never see another contract the way that his is structured. And, you know, he just didn't want to go anywhere else. I mean, he can pick where he wants to go in the off season. He doesn't want to be a run a player. He'll most likely be with another team next season, and, you know, he'll pick the team that he wants to go to. As far as Thomas, yeah, it was surprising in some way, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if this doesn't get revisited in the off season. Given, you know, if when the new people or the people that are still here, if they're still here, look at how close they came and how much they were willing to get, how much the Broncos were willing to give up. I don't know, a 2017 first round pick where who knows if Peyton Manning's not there next year, and a second round pick for next year. That's not a bad return for a 30-year-old left tackle. I wouldn't be shocked if that doesn't get revisited in the offseason.
Tom, who's going to play quarterback this week?
If he can walk, my guess is it's going to be Josh McCown. The head coach pretty much said that yesterday, that it's going to be McCown as long as he's healthy enough. But, you know, he didn't practice yesterday. We'll see what the rest of the week brings. If not, it will be Johnny Manziel.
The play of each guy this year, I mean, we got a chance to see Johnny against the Bengals on Thursday night. His receivers didn't help him a lot. He was good out of the pocket. He was not good in the pocket. Is that a fair assessment? The guy really can't play out of the pocket?
Yeah, that's what they're trying to preach to him, and it's something that, you know, it's kind of been a struggle to him when he's been in the pocket. Now, in fairness to him, he's been much better than he was a year ago. I mean, last year was just kind of a wasted year for him. He's shown improvement. He's working harder, but he's still dealing with issues. Number one, he's not very big. He has trouble seeing in the pocket, so it's probably part of the reason that he tries to get out of it. And number two, that he does struggle throwing from the pocket, and he's going to have to, you know, whether it's here or wherever he goes, he's going to have to deal with that at some point, because, as you guys know, most quarterbacks that sustain success in the NFL play from the pocket, and guys like RG3 and Colin Kaepernick, who came into the league and were terrific that first year or so, the league caught up with them, and they've struggled to kind of get their career back on track.
It doesn't sound like Joe Batonio, one of their best picks in 2014, is going to be able to go Sunday against the Steelers. So I would assume Cameron Irving would make the start there at one of the two guard spots. What's the drop off going to be like there?
We don't know yet. Batonio was a really good rookie. He had a really good rookie season this year. Like the offensive line in general, has not been quite as good as they were last year. I think he was among the league leaders in penalties for offensive linemen. But he's still a good player. I think there is going to be a drop off with Cameron Irving coming in there, and that's not a knock on Cameron Irving. He's never played really guard in the NFL, so he's never started the game. This will be his first start, so there's certainly going to be a drop off, and that's, again, not necessarily a knock on him.
Who's been the biggest surprise this year, Gary Barnage or Duke Johnson at running back?
Well, you guys picked good players. Barnage, because of the fact that, look around the league, and you guys know the history of the game. Very rarely does a guy 30-year-old emerge to having a year that's, I don't know if he's going to make the Pro Bowl, but he certainly has. He's certainly in the argument. I mean, guys don't normally just bust out at age 30. Interestingly, his best friend is a Steeler, so they will meet for the first time. Maybe the second time they'll meet, but certainly in the first time in this rivalry with D'Angelo Williams, running back there. They're extremely good friends and work charities together. Duke Johnson, we've talked a lot about failed picks. He's the real deal. He is a really good player, not as much a running back, but as just a weapon out of the backfield. They line him up all over the formation. He's been really good. He's one of the guys that they've kind of come as advertised, and that doesn't always happen here.
On the defensive side, Joe Hayden and Dante Whitner, they're both still in the concussion protocol program. I mean, this has been an extended time. It sounds like it's for me, when you get past multiple weeks, it's serious stuff. What's their status?
Yeah, we haven't heard anything more other than that they continue to be in the program. And it's, the story of Joe Hayden this year has been a massive one, because of A, the injuries, and B, when he was playing, he was not playing like the Joe Hayden necessarily we'd seen him in the last couple of years, and I'm not sure why that is. But their cornerback play is so important to the scheme of this defense. It's maybe more so than any scheme around the league. They want their players playing press coverage. They were very good against the pass last year. I think they led the NFL in opposing passer rating. Were right up there in turnovers. I think second in interceptions. And none of that stuff has happened this year. They really struggled. The guys that are replacing Joe have not been able to play well. Justin Gilbert has, just been nowhere to be found, although we may see him a little bit this week. But it's been a real struggle.
How's Barkevious Mingo doing? First-round pick in 2013.
He's another guy that they've used him in ways, almost like a hybrid. He's almost like a safety. They drop him into coverage a lot when he plays. And he's actually made a couple plays. He was almost a hero against the Broncos a couple weeks ago, and they couldn't get 7 yards to set up their field goal kicker, who's, been one of their best players. They just don't use him a whole lot. He doesn't rush the passer very much. It's just his body playing is just to the point where he gets lost in the wash when he comes in on the rush a lot of times.
With a lot of Steelers fans had their eyes on cornerback Pierre Desir prior to that draft, and he's obviously kind of been forced into extended action with the Browns, and I suspect we'll see quite a bit of him Sunday at Heinz Field. You know, is he going to be a keeper? I mean, is he making the progress? You know, is he surprising some people there?
Well, they, first of all, they love his work ethic. I mean, there's not a kid on this team that works harder than Pierre. But he had a long jump. I mean, he looks the part, and he's been okay. But he had a tough stretch against at the end of the St. Louis game where he took a costly penalty, and on the very next play, he got beat for a touchdown. He's still just, you know, the jump from Division II football has been a big one for him. Again, if he keeps working, you hope guys that work hard get rewarded, but it's not been quite there yet. And again, he's in a tough spot having to go in for Hayden. He's just been okay. He's slashed some moments and then a couple times he's been exposed. So it's been kind of a mixed bag with Deere.
When we watched Danny Shelton during the preseason, you thought to yourself, man, you go ahead and pencil this guy in to go to the Pro Bowl maybe for his rookie season. But, of course, preseason being the preseason, you know, you get into the season, you start seeing that you know, he's getting pushed off the ball a little bit. Where is the weaker parts of his game right now? Just handling the double teams, or is it something else?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's, you know, a lot of it's technique. I think it's just he's a good kid. I think that a lot of people thought it was the right pick. It was one of those like head scratchers. He's just adjusting to the game. You're right. He's surprisingly got pushed off the line a lot. He's struggled with his pad level, keeping his pads down. He's just still trying to work on his technique. And I think this is, he is a good kid, and I think he's an eager learner. I would be surprised if he struggled as much next year, but this has been a real learning curve for him. I think they're trying to play him some more too. Earlier in the year, they've had him in this rotation. He dropped down to like 25% of his snaps not long ago, but he's starting to get some more playing time now, and we'll see if he can get better. But he's just, and he's the first to admit he's not had the impact that he thought he would.
Tom, just kind of wrapping things up. When a team's 2-7, and obviously we know the Browns got off to a good start last year, and as you pointed out, finished poorly, but there you have seen kind of bad starts and bad seasons there repeatedly. What brings these guys to work each week? I mean, are they still doing the job? Are they still motivated to play? I mean, look, they're professionals. They get paid, and that's easy to say that you go out and, you know, do your job for the amount of money you're getting paid. But at 2-7, they know there's no playoffs in the future this season, and it's got to be frustrating for a lot of these guys. What's the environment like around the team?
It's still pretty strong. That really hasn't been an issue, I don't think. I think they've been okay in that regard. I have not sensed a lot of grumbling. Whatever grumbling there's been has been more about, there's been a little bit of grumbling about, on the defensive side about how guys are being used, but not just the overall, oh, God, I can't believe we have to come in each day. I have not sensed this season at all where there has been a game where they just gave up. And that's a credit to Mike Patton and the staff that, their problems, they just don't have the right personnel for the job.
So what's the scenario the Browns win this game?
What scenario? Well, obviously it helps to have in the quarterback that's like 18-2 against them, most likely out of the lineup. That's a good first start, good step. I don't know. They're going to have to force some turnovers, something they have not been doing all year. They're going to have to hope that they can. One of the big issues in recent weeks for this team, and again, every week it seems to be something different, but right now what's been really troubling them is they've been getting blown out in the second half. So they've now scored 55-3 in the last three games. They've been very strong in the first half of games. And earlier in the year, they were getting behind and having to come back. That's what I'm saying. It's one of those years where Well, you can't hang your hat on anything. This team, I think the most damning thing you can say about this Browns team is you can say, you ask the question, what do they do well? And I don't know what the answer is. They punt well and they kick field goals well, but they really don't have anything where you can say, you know, this is their kind of default mode when things are going bad. Last year was pass defense, creating turnovers, a little bit of success in the running game, as Steelers recall. But I don't know. This year it's just been one of those years where nothing is really going well for them.
Tom, man, great stuff, great insights as always. We really appreciate your time, and I'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Okay, take care. Thanks for having me.
All right, Dave, good stuff from Tom. And, yeah, look, it's a Browns team. It's good to hear that they haven't quit, but it certainly sounds like state of the union. I mean, it's kind of, you know, standard state for Cleveland. Maybe the word disarray is too strong a word, but when guys who cover the team think that in the offseason you're going to again have regime change at the GM and the coaching level, I mean, good gracious. You got to get, I mean, you know, needless to say, you got to get these next hires right, because it's been, you know, what, 16 years now, and they're not even sniffing it. And it doesn't look like they're a very talented roster even, where I thought 2 years ago, I thought there was talent on the roster and they were headed in the right direction. Now I'm not sure you can even say that. So disappointing stuff if you're a Browns fan.
Yeah, the Steelers 8-0 at home against the Browns with Mike Tomlin as a head coach. So you got that to think about going into this game as well, too. What do you think the chances of McCown playing are this week?
I guess listening to that conversation, I'd put it above 50%, but I didn't have that impression yesterday afternoon. So, 65-35, I guess?
Yeah, I'm with you there as well, too. The Steelers obviously are going to have to prepare for both quarterbacks. What offensive player scares you the most? McCown, Barnage, or the running back?
None of the above. I mean, Barnage doesn't scare me. I mean, Steelers have had trouble with tight ends. He's having a good year, whatever. I mean, I haven't seen enough of Duke Johnson to have much of an opinion, but I guess I'll take him by default.
Yeah, and Joe Hayden, even if Joe Hayden plays on the defensive side of football, he really hasn't had great success against Antonio Brown so far during his career. So we'll be monitoring those injuries, of course, the rest of the week. We'll be back on Friday to give you a little bit more insight on the upcoming game. We'll talk about news and notes around the NFL. We'll give you our weekly picks for week 10 in the NFL as well, too. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, if you want to support our cause, we're sort of like the PBS of Steelers broadcast. You know, if you want to donate and help the cause, we certainly will accept your donation. You can go to SteelersDepot.com. If you look in the right side, upper right of the site, you'll see the donate button. And for those that have donated, we appreciate it. And for those about to donate, we appreciate that as well. And if you can't, we certainly do understand. David, until Friday, act accordingly, David. It's Browns week.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.